Vic Minette. A very good morning to you. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday. It's going to be a hot one. Hottest day of the year, in fact, so far. For now, though, like I said to you, the phone-in today is a little bit different to usual. This is quite upsetting, potentially, to some. And if you've got little ones with you, it might be worth sort of getting them out of earshot for the next hour or so, because it really is quite a tricky one. Now, according to the latest statistics from the National Crime Agency, there are believed to be 750,000 men who have a sexual interest in children. One in 35 adult males, to put it another way. Now, you might remember back in February we talked about this after Simon Bailey, who is the National Police Chiefs Council's lead for child protection and abuse investigations, because he said that paedophiles should be given greater access to helplines and not face sanctions unless they pose an actual physical threat to children. It was a very busy phone-in, and you had an awful lot to say about it. Now, there's one charity that aims to help paedophiles before they become offenders. It's the Specialist Treatment Organisation for the Prevention of Sexual Offending, or STOPSO for short. Now, we're going to be joined by their chair and founder a little bit later on, who is prepared to answer your questions. And she'll also be explaining to us about why she wants to help paedophiles and how she can as well. First, I want you to listen to this. It's Chris. Now, Chris isn't his real name, but he doesn't want to be identified. He describes himself as a non-offending paedophile who went to STOPSO when he found that the NHS couldn't help him. Believe me, I'm struggling with breathing because this was as hard for me as it will be for you to listen. He first started looking at images of children whilst using the internet during his late teens and early 20s. And he told me he realised his attraction started seeking out non-pornographic images of children. And I asked if that he was conscious that what he was doing was wrong.
It was kind of that moment when it sort of hit me, like, hang on a minute. What I'm doing here is wrong, albeit that I hadn't done anything illegal. What I was doing was morally and ethically wrong. And
you say you weren't doing anything illegal, but the images you were looking at weren't pornographic.
No, exactly. It's one of those things. There is no the internet is the internet, and anything pretty much is accessible to anybody. And there is no shortage of images of children on the internet. And I can't tell you why this is the case. I don't know myself, but I never sort of sought out images of child pornography. For me, what I was doing was I was looking at and downloading images of children and using those for my own sexual gratification, rather than it wasn't pornographic images I was using.
So there's you know it's wrong, but there's enough of a switch to stop you reaching further when it came to the images.
Yeah, I think that's really what it comes down to. I mean, for me personally, you know, I was, as I said, I was sort of late teens, early 20s. I was still very much of an age where I'd just gone to university and I was kind of exploring what my own sexuality was, what it meant, and that kind of thing. I, you know, became aware that I was attracted to people who were younger than I was. And that,
How young?
So for me, we're talking sort of early teenagers.
Right.
And yeah, for me, and I can only sort of talk about my own experience, but there was a moment when that sort of hit me, oh, hang on a minute, I don't want to be doing this. Mm. But part of the difficulty that I experienced was that those feelings of hate and self-loathing became a very big thing for me. I ended up depressed, I ended up becoming more and more isolated because I was ashamed of what I was doing, because I was essentially paranoid that anybody else would find out what I was doing.
But you were still doing it, though.
Exactly, because that was, as misguided as this was, that was something that I was doing that was giving me pleasure, albeit for a short-lived period of time. And that was the difficulty with it. That was the problem with it. That was why I was doing it. And I can only equate it to, it becomes almost like a compulsion, almost something like smoking or something like that, whereby I got to a point with it where even though I wanted to stop doing it, I kept going back to it.
But still, there's a switch that stops you from crossing a line, going further. You've never been near a child sexually?
No, I've never been near a child in a sexual way. I've never done anything like that at all. And I think, certainly for me, it's not just something that I've never done, it's something that I've never felt any desire to do. Because, I mean, I would equate that to somebody like myself who feels a sexual attraction to children. Anybody will walk down the street and see somebody that they feel attracted to. To me, that's slightly different. That doesn't mean that they're going to, what amounts to sexually assault that person, rape that person.
No, of course not. But I mean, fundamentally, when you know when you're growing up, whether you fancy women, fancy men, you want there to be at some point, I suppose, a physical relationship with that person. And it's and if what we're saying is paedophilia is just it's a condition of sexuality, mm-hmm. then it follows, doesn't it, that you'd want a physical manifestation of that?
It's a very, very difficult question to answer.
Yeah.
My personal experience is that although I feel a sexual attraction to children, I also feel experience sexual attraction to people around my own age.
Right.
So I can and have been able to satisfy that sort of need for intimacy, a need for a relationship in an appropriate way. But I can completely see how that sort of logical leap goes from, well, if somebody feels attracted to children, then they're more likely to, you know, they're going to want to satisfy that attraction in some way. For me, I was satisfying that attraction through using images of children.
And that was enough?
Yes. I've never described it in that way before, but yes. That at that time, I perceived it to be enough at that time. The difficult thing with it is that, for me, it wasn't, I was doing it because I thought it would make me happy, and it didn't. You know, it wasn't. It was never going to do that because of the guilt and the self-loathing and everything that came with it.
Right.
I became trapped in this sort of downward spiral of committing this behaviour I didn't want to be doing.
Mm. So did you speak to anyone? Who can you speak to about that?
This isn't the kind of thing that you is easy to talk about. It's not the kind of thing that you can just go and tell anybody about. I had looked sort of around, what was there any help that was available? And the short answer was no, not really. I ended up going to speak to my GP in the end. And he was very honest with me and said, right, well, I've never had anybody come in and tell me this before, but I will do my best to help you, you know, to get you the help that you're asking for. But it turned out that there was nowhere in the NHS locally to me where I could get support. And the reason for that was because although there are people in the NHS who had the training and experience to work with people in the position I was in, there was no money for them to work with anybody who hadn't already been convicted of a criminal offence.
Oh, right. So you need to have offended to get help.
Yeah, in a lot of parts of the country, yes, within statutory services, if you haven't committed an offence, you won't get any help.
Right.
Which, of course, is to me seems silly, because at that point there's already a victim. And one of the reasons that I wanted so much to get help was because I was concerned about what I might do if I didn't.
So you were at risk of what, self-harm?
I mean, my depression had got to the point where I was a risk to myself, yes, absolutely. But also, you know, I was very conscious that, and I think because I didn't really understand why I was doing what I was doing, I was very conscious that, you know, there's a risk to of harm to children and young people here.
Do you think that you could have become an offender? You could have taken it beyond the point you were at?
I mean, nobody can predict the future, but it's very easy to see how that could have happened.
Right.
It's very easy to see how I could have ended up. Because there's a very fine line between what I was doing, which was using images of children, and what I could have been doing, which is using child abuse images. There's a very fine line there. It's still wrong either way, but legally obviously there is a distinction.
Sure.
And you know, but in both cases you are sat at home in front of a computer by yourself. The actual act of doing it is the same thing, so it's very easy to see how I could have gone from one to the other.
That's what Chris had to say. We'll be hearing a little bit more from him later on in the show, and also from the chair of the charity that helped him, Stop Zone. By the way, just as an aside, if you've been affected by anything in that interview, there are people you can talk to. There's Childline, of course, 0800 11 11, the Samaritans on 116 123. Or you can get in touch with the Specialist Treatment Organisation for the Prevention of Sexual Offending. The number's 07473 299 833. That's 07473 299 833. I'll give you all of those numbers again a little bit later on. And of course, if you want to give us a call, we'll happily pass them on, 0345 900 5200. So what do you think? It's interesting. Interesting is just such the wrong word. But what he had to say about not being able to access help unless you're an offender, does that make you think again about when we talked about this in February, after what that chief policeman had to say about helping paedophiles?